Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
You never really notice how long a hallway is until it starts to feel like it's watching you. Most people think of ghosts as something from the past, lost souls, unfinished business, shadows of who we used to love. But what happens when something enters your home that was never human to begin with? When you hear the breathing of a dog that's long gone, or wake up to the soft pressure of a paw pressing against your cheek, or worse, the feeling that something is hiding just beyond the light, watching your every step. Tonight's letter comes from a 15-year-old girl who thought she understood the difference between fear and fascination. A girl whose curiosity was awakened by her older sister, whose interest in the occult and a late-night ritual by a cursed pond may have opened a door that can't be shut. She lives in a modest house, like many others, but what lingers in the walls, in the hallway, and in the dark corner of the ceiling is unlike anything she's ever known. Let's get to the letter. They write, "Tony, I don't know where to start exactly, but I think if I don't write this out, it's going to keep growing inside of me like it already has. I'm 15, and I guess you could say I'm not like most girls my age. I don't go to sleep listening to music or texting my friends. I go to sleep hoping I don't hear the hallway again, hoping I don't see it. My sister got me into all this, into the paranormal. She's older, in college now, but when she was home, we used to stay up late watching shows about ghosts, possessions, people who'd vanished without a trace. At first, I watched with a blanket over my face. I was scared of everything. But then, it changed. I didn't just want to watch. I wanted to know what was really out there. That's when I started noticing things. Small things, really. Things I figured were in my head. Until they started to repeat. And there's one place in our house where everything feels different. Not always bad, but always aware. Our hallway. But before I get to that, I need to tell you about Misty. She was my cat, all black, with the kind of stare that makes you think she knows what you're going to do before you do it. She wasn't easy. She picked me. When I was 9, she got sick, cancer. She didn't cry or moan, just started moving slower, quieter. We buried her under my window right where the wildflowers grow now. I visited sometimes, still, and ever since then, I felt her. I know how that sounds, but it's not a guess. There are nights when I feel a small pressure next to my pillow, followed by the slightest warmth on my cheek. I'll open my eyes, and sometimes I'll catch a flicker of movement, low to the floor, fast, just beyond the doorframe, a black blur, nothing ever threatening. I think she's still looking after me. Then there's Chantel, our dog. She was a Samoyed, pure white, and she was with us for 16 years. She had this way of resting her head on your knees when you were sad, like she could just feel it. But near the end, she started forgetting things. You'd call her name and she'd look at you like she wasn't sure where she was or who you were. Her breathing got worse too. This low, labored wheeze when she tried to move. It was hard to listen to, especially at night. When she passed, it felt like a hole opened in the house. She'd always been there. And then about a week later, I heard her again. One time, just once. I was lying in bed, and I heard that wheeze in the dark, just outside my room. I remember freezing, part of me afraid, but the bigger part just aching, because I missed her. I haven't heard it since, but I felt it. All of that was strange, but bearable, familiar even. But the third presence in our home, it's not like Misty or Chantel. It doesn't comfort. It doesn't love. I don't even think it was ever alive. It started with my sister's ex-boyfriend, Kellen. He was different. Not just moody or quiet. He had this fascination with Wicca, with rituals. I remember once overhearing them talk about energy balances and thin places. At the time, I didn't understand any of it. but I do remember the day they came back from Elder Pond. That place has always been weird, silent even when the wind's blowing. The animals don't go near it, and they wouldn't tell me what they did, but I knew something went wrong. My sister wouldn't sleep that night. For days after, she jumped every time the floor creaked, and then she left for college. That's when it really started. One night, I think it was close to winter, I woke up out of nowhere. Not because of a dream, not because of a sound, just thirsty. I walked into the hallway and something stopped me cold. It was pitch black, like darker than it had any right to be. It was more than just no light. It felt wrong, heavy. I stood there frozen, water forgotten, then bolted into the bathroom, slammed the door, stood there shaking. I splashed water on my face, told myself I was just being paranoid. But when I opened the bathroom door again, the hallway hadn't changed. Still dark, still wrong. I ran to my room, jumped into bed, buried myself under the covers, and didn't come out until morning. When Emily came home for Christmas break, I didn't even plan to bring it up. But one night, we were both lying awake, not talking, and out of nowhere, I said, "I don't like the hallway." She turned to me so fast I thought I'd scared her. She said, "You feel it too?" That's when she told me about the light, about how she always left one on. Not because she was scared of the dark, but because she didn't trust what came with the dark. We didn't talk about Kellen. We didn't talk about Elder Pond. We just kept the lights on and didn't stand in the hallway any longer than we had to. And that was only the beginning. After that night with my sister, things shifted. The fear stopped feeling like it was just mine. There was a mutual understanding between us, a silent agreement. We both kept lights on. We never entered the hallway unless we had to. And when we did, we walked fast. Never ran. Running felt like it would draw attention, but the strange thing was, even our parents started noticing something. They didn't say it out loud, not at first. My mom started leaving the bathroom light on. My dad began closing the hallway door after dusk, muttering something about energy bills, even though he used to be the one yelling at us for not turning lights off. Guests would make odd remarks. "Your hallway feels long," or "Something about that space gives me chills." One night I was already in bed when I heard Emily scream. Not a startled shout, a full guttural scream that ripped me out of the covers. I ran to her room, and she was sitting up in bed, face pale, eyes locked on the doorway. She wouldn't move, wouldn't blink. I had to shake her. When she finally spoke, all she said was, "It stood right there." She pointed to the doorway, just the empty space between her room and the hall. She didn't tell me what she saw. She didn't have to. The next day, she moved her bed so it faced the wall. That same night, something else happened. The power flickered, but only in the hallway. Every other room stayed lit. Then came the sound. It started faint, like someone walking on the roof. But it wasn't the roof. It was above the ceiling, running back and forth fast. No footsteps outside, no raccoons. We had someone come inspect the attic the next day. They found nothing, not even dust disturbed. I started reading about poltergeists. I didn't tell Emily. I didn't want to scare her more than she already was. But the more I read, the more I wondered if this was something different. Something made. Born from stress. My sister had been breaking down for months. Debt, college, trying to stay afloat. I remember her sobbing in the kitchen once when she thought I couldn't hear. She kept whispering, "It's too much. It's too much." Could a person create something like this without meaning to? Could all that pressure become a thing? Not a ghost, but something that fed off emotion? The idea burrowed into me, and I haven't been able to shake it since. Then came the worst night. It was late. Everyone was asleep. I don't know why I got up. I just did. My feet moved before my brain had a reason. I walked past the hallway and out the back door, through the yard, down to the woods behind our house. Elder Pond was still, like always. Still and wrong. I stood there barefoot in the frost, my breath clouded in front of me. And then on the other side of the water, I saw it. A figure, not moving, not blinking, just watching. No face I could make out. No features at all. just a shape. But I knew it was what had come home with Emily. I didn't scream. I couldn't. I turned and ran. I didn't stop until I slammed the door shut behind me and locked it twice. When I told Emily the next morning, she didn't act surprised. She just started crying. She said, "I thought I left it there." That was 2 weeks ago. Since then, Misty's still here, quiet and loyal, just like always. Sometimes I still feel Chantel's wheeze late at night, but whatever that third thing is, it's gone silent. No footsteps, no flickering lights, not even that feeling in the hallway. But silence doesn't mean safety. Silence is just patience. We all keep the lights on now. We never mention the pond. And at night, I still turn my head before sleep and look toward the hallway. Because sometimes, just sometimes, I think I see something in the corner of the ceiling. Something that was never meant to come inside. But it did. Thanks for taking the time to read this. Jenna M. But what do we make of a story like Jenna's? On the surface, you might say this is a house haunted by grief. A girl mourning the soft touch of a cat who never really left. The memory of a dog whose presence echoes in the stillness. These are the kinds of hauntings we understand, spirits that linger out of love, out of loyalty. But the third presence, that's where things turn. Psychologically, some might argue Jenna's story reflects a sensitive, intuitive mind shaped by fear, suggestion, and stress. The hallway? A subconscious trigger, a space where anxieties collect like dust in the corners. That shadow in the dark? It could be sleep paralysis, a waking dream, or the brain protecting itself from something it doesn't want to understand. The pond could symbolize trauma or the mystery of her sister's evolving beliefs. And Jenna, caught between innocence and awareness, might just be the perfect receiver for those projections. But then there's the other possibility. What if the thing her sister encountered at Elder Pond wasn't symbolic? What if it was real? And angry. In many traditions, rituals that attempt to disrupt or banish an entity can backfire. Not because they don't work, but because they work just enough to get its attention. And when the one who disturbed it leaves, something follows. Could emotional vulnerability, like Emily's mounting stress and guilt, serve as a kind of invitation? Poltergeist lore often ties these phenomena to teenagers or young adults under pressure. Objects move, lights flicker, and sometimes something darker appears that doesn't just haunt, it waits. Jenna's hallway never asked her to run, but it made her want to. And maybe that's the most disturbing part. Whatever it was, it didn't rush forward or slam doors or scream in the night. It simply stood there, watching. Patient, as if it had time on its side. And if it did come from Elder Pond, maybe it never meant to stay in the water. Maybe it was always waiting for someone to take it home. So the next time you feel a hallway grow too dark too fast or see something just barely out of frame, ask yourself this. Is it memory or something that never really left?
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.